This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Hi Louise, my name's Naomi and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Naomi. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings, and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9, and we're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Would our guest like to introduce themselves and just give us a quick sketch of who you are?
Yeah, sure. I'm Naomi. I'm an alcoholic. Quick sketch of who I am.
Maybe tell us how old you are and how long you've been sober.
Well, I'll stay wide away from the age question. But so I'm in my 40s. And I'm about 6 years, 4 months sober. So it took me a long time to come into the rooms.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about your family, occupation, kids? Whereabouts are you from?
As a typical alcoholic, anyone who's listened to the show regularly will know possibly that geographicals are one of the things that we tend to do, sort of running away from ourselves. So although I lived most of my sort of primary years in Timaru, I've lived all over New Zealand. And I have worked as a journalist, I've worked in PR, I'm currently a teacher. But a big part of my journey in my drinking days was a lot of moving.
Yep. Right, sure. So tell us a little bit about, you know, when did you start drinking and, you know, why did you drink and how did it progress?
Okay, sure. Before I came into AA, and in fact even for some time after I'd been in the rooms, I kind of blamed my drinking on a trauma that had happened to me about age 14.
Right.
What I've come to realise, having been in the rooms for a little bit longer, was that my drinking started as a response to my inability to cope. And it was triggered by a trauma, but my inability to cope with life doesn't just happen as a result of things going wrong in my life. I can't cope with life by myself in the good times. So although it looked on the surface like my disease was a result of a trauma, the trauma triggered probably my response to my disease and my seeking an answer. And at age 14, the answer was alcohol.
So what did alcohol do for you?
It took away the pain that I was feeling. It numbed my emotions. And that was exactly what I was looking for. I couldn't tolerate the emotion I was feeling. And it really worked. Like it was an amazing tonic for me at that time.
And what sort of drinking, you know, socially, binge drinking? Tell us a bit more about how you drink the alcohol.
From the very first drink I took after that trauma, it was always to blackout, right. Always, every time. And that drinking in the early days was with others, but it wasn't social drinking. But there were times when my drinking did look social, primarily looking back because the others around me were drinking exactly as I was drinking. So it was very difficult for me to differentiate between my drinking and what would be considered normal drinking. And I think for me, in a society where binge drinking is the norm, it is quite difficult to tell the difference between alcohol abuse and alcoholism. So I was abusing alcohol because I was an alcoholic. So I know that now. I didn't know that then.
And so what point did you feel it was a problem? And did you do anything to try and stop?
In fact, it didn't dawn on me that it was a problem. Even when friends were telling me that it was a problem and friends were saying that they had a problem with my drinking, I still didn't view it as a problem. And I think that's quite common to the disease. It's quite a difficult thing to face up to, because if you face up and say, I'm an alcoholic, most of us realise that means putting the bottle down and leaving it. And, you know, when alcohol has been my answer to everything that I couldn't face, which was life, the idea of leaving it was terrifying. So partly that was the reason, and partly I had other manifestations of my illness, an eating disorder.
Right.
It clouded for me what was really truly going on. It became quite difficult to separate the two out. And in fact, for me, it was a pointless exercise trying to separate them. They started at the same time. At that time, I thought for the same cause. And it was actually one of the first eating disorder clinics I went into. I remember the nurse saying to me she was looking for alcohol withdrawal symptoms. And I was baffled. And even knowing that I drank what I drank, I didn't think that it was possible for me to have withdrawal symptoms, and I didn't know what they would look like.
No.
And at that time, I didn't have withdrawal symptoms, and that was in 2000. However, my disease progressed fairly steadily from that point on. So that was about the time I started looking for help. And like I said earlier, I'm currently 6 years, 4 months sober. So there was a long journey towards AA before recovery began.
So what was it that brought you to your rock bottom?
My rock bottom was a really long and slow descent.
Right.
And the thing that I ended up finding for myself was that my dishonesty around the fact that I was unable to stop, the fact that I couldn't face that and be honest with anyone around me about that, and I was lying and cheating and just not being true to what was actually going on for me, to the people who I loved. And that was utterly intolerable. And the only thing I could do to tolerate it, ironically, was to keep blotting it out with more and more alcohol. And it got to the point where at one stage, doctors who had been trying to help me but not able to offer me any services as such, because physically I was too compromised at that point. So I couldn't go into eating disorder services, and I couldn't go into any more rehabs. I'd already been to rehabs because I was so physically compromised. And I remember a doctor saying, with me present to my parents, you need to start planning a funeral because this girl is not going to make it.
So what sort of effect has that had on your family and your relationships, friends?
The result of that on my family was, they never gave up on me. Like, they never, when I had no hope, They kept reminding me who I had been at one time, and God bless them for that, because I had no recollection. And I'm kind of jumping ahead now. When I was about a year in AA, and going to daily meetings and sometimes twice a day, and still unable to stop myself from needing to medicate, I I'd had a relapse and I was coming out of my detox, and I just remember praying with everything I had, just to, and I wasn't sure what I was praying to, and I wasn't saying it politely. I was screaming and swearing in my head and just giving up, and just utterly giving up. And I didn't care what that meant. I didn't care if I lived or died. That was my rock bottom.
Right.
Was that night when I actually, it was my rock bottom and it was my saving grace. Sure. That I got to that point where I said, I just can't. Handed it over to a power greater than myself. And I woke without any of the cravings that have driven me crazy for the years leading up to that night.
Right.
And that was the miracle for me.
So take us back a little bit to your first experience within AA and your first AA meeting. What was it like? You know, how did you feel, and how did others treat you?
My first meeting of AA was very strange. I could relate to everything people were saying in that first meeting.
Right.
That first meeting got me. It really did. And I felt like this is it. This is me. This is where I belong. Mm. However, that was that first meeting, and I met my first sponsor at that first meeting, and I felt safe. I felt really safe. My father was with me. And then my disease, kind of for a long time in that first year, would try to niggle at me and get me to not feel like I fitted. And quite often people will say in the rooms things like, listen to the similarities, not the differences. My head was telling me all about the differences. My head was telling me these people, because you get offered rides to and from meetings from people. When you are accustomed to, like, modern society, people don't give unless there's something in it for them. And, you know, they were trying to explain to me, yes, but it helps me stay sober. None of that made sense to me, and none of it felt believable to me. And so for quite a long time in the rooms, and particularly when people said, I've lost my desire to drink, I thought they were just lying. I didn't believe that the program worked for quite some time. And that's probably why that first year was such, it was hell for me, because I knew I couldn't drink. I knew I shouldn't drink. I knew it would kill me. But I didn't believe the program either. So that was kind of no man's land.
So tell us a bit more about when, you know, you had this realization, and what have you needed to do to stay sober? So, you know, describe the process from that point forward for you.
Well, from that point where if you've never experienced any kind of obsession or compulsion, it's very difficult for me to explain that it's your every waking thought. No matter how much I would try to take my mind away from the idea of drinking, my mind would just constantly be going back to it. And it would sometimes even feel like it wasn't that I was thinking of drinking, even. I would be at the counter buying the vodka and not even kind of really conscious of it happening. And I've forgotten your question.
So, at the point that you realised that I like what I'm hearing here, and some of it started to make sense, and you went to sleep that night and you woke up and felt the difference.
Okay, so that's what I was sort of trying to say. So what I was saying is, when that stuff that had plagued me every waking moment and through the night even for years, when that was taken from me, I then had no choice but to believe the program because I had evidence. Prior to that, I had someone else's word. And when I was thinking they were lying, that word didn't really mean that much. So then when I had evidence that there was a power greater than me, that I was told that in this program, then I could believe that the rest of the program might be true. And from that point, I was already doing, like I said earlier, a meeting or sometimes two a day anyway.
Right.
So it was a matter of keeping doing those things. Mm-hmm. And primarily, I kept doing those things because I was terrified that if I didn't, that whatever magic had happened would wear off. I kept doing meetings. And the other suggested things that I did was I started doing a reading from the daily reflections every morning. And I started handing my will and my life over to God every morning and saying my prayers of gratitude in the evening. And I made that the bookend of my day quite early on. And that gave me a real connection with my higher power and that real sense of keeping it within that 24 hours. When I bookended the day, I could be aware that for those hours I had stayed sober and I could rest easy that evening and know that I could, you know, sleep through the night and it was going to be okay.
How important has service been as part of your recovery?
Service for me has been important. I have tended to, I have been a sponsor, but I have found sponsorship quite difficult because I didn't have the educational variety that people talk about, where instead of it being a flash of, you know, God suddenly taking away my desire to drink, that doesn't happen for everyone, unfortunately. And I find it is quite difficult for me to explain to someone who hasn't had that experience how to work the program without it.
So what some of the positions that you've had in recovery, and have they been helpful?
Yeah, so there are so many things you can do, like showing up to meetings and being willing to share is really important because the fellowship doesn't exist if no one shows up to the meetings. You know, just offering rides to people, making yourself available to people if they want to talk on the phone or text, welcoming the newcomer, essentially.
Of course. And so just quickly, if you can just describe what's your life like today.
I can very easily describe, I used to be wound up tight like a coil and full of nerves. Just nothing could ever relax me. And in the end, even alcohol couldn't. And with my higher power with me, I'm relaxed, I'm content, and contentedness is so beautiful.
That's wonderful. So what would you suggest for any listeners that think they may have a drinking problem?
I would suggest that you make Alcoholics Anonymous your next first step. Like I said earlier, I did try rehabilitations. I tried everything. I tried hypnotherapy, acupuncture. AA is the only thing that has worked for me. And also giving up on the idea that I had the power to stop drinking, because I didn't. That's how I know I'm an alcoholic.
And very quickly, AA is described as a spiritual program. What does spirituality mean to you?
Just a comfort that I know that if I work my program and have a conscious contact with the power greater than myself that has restored me to sanity, and belief is for me the best thing.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, Naomi, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up at the web, on the web at aa.org.nz, or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30. You can find podcasts of all of our past shows on Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking.